Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation. If it seems like we're picking on Ryan Walters at the Observer...
Ah! I'm sorry.
I wouldn't say we're picking on him, but he has given us a lot to talk about for a number of weeks now. So as I like to call him, Wrecking Ball Ryan Walters, he just continues to rack up the lawsuits. So former Norman Public Schools teacher Summer Boymier filed one this week. We have another teacher, she was a counselor at Edmonds Schools, who we will be talking to here on ObserverCast, has filed a lawsuit against him. And I think there's been roughly three, in the past 2 or 3 weeks. But this doesn't even touch on the other stuff that he has been doing in his capacity as state superintendent of public education here in Oklahoma. And it has gotten so bad, and there has been conversation all summer about the possibility of impeaching him. And finally last week, this Oklahoma House Democrats finally took the step to call for an investigation to impeach Ryan Walters as state superintendent of public instruction. He is under federal, investigation by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. For misuse of federal dollars, GEAR dollars, ARPA relief dollars. Just the list goes on and on. And so he has just given us a lot to talk about. He's handing us these news bits. So I don't think he's making it easy on us to focus on him, because what he's doing is so egregious. And we haven't even talked about how he now has a contract apparently with PragerU, which is no less than a propaganda shop for right-wing Christo-fascism. So anyways, all of that to say is we are talking with House Democratic Leader Cindy Munson this evening to talk about this, the Democrats' call for an investigation that will hopefully lead to the impeachment of Wrecking Ball Ryan Walters. So Representative Munson, thank you for joining us this evening. Mm-hmm. So kind of set the groundwork for us. Give us a sense of the terrain that led to your caucus calling for this quite unprecedented step in state government.
Yeah. Well, first, of course, thank you for having me. I always enjoy coming and visiting and feel like I'm among friends. So that's always good. But you really laid out a lot of why we took the step that we took last week. But I will give a little background on why, because, we as in not just House Democrats, but even Republicans have heard from Oklahomans all across the state, not just in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, but even in rural areas of Oklahoma, who have reached out, who have wanted some sense of accountability when it comes to our state superintendent. Like what you just said at the very end there about an unprecedented move in state government. It is not every day that we're thinking about how we impeach our colleagues or someone who's been elected to a statewide elected office. I will say in 2017, there was a move to create a committee that committee did recommend expulsion for one of my Republican colleagues, if you remember Representative Dan Kirby, which I'll talk a little bit about that as we move along. But other than that, this isn't really something that is asked of us. But I think where we're at today, the circumstances require us to do something beyond just asking Ryan Walters to stop what he's doing and to course correct and start doing his job and taking care of the State Department of Education and get away from the campaign rhetoric and to focus on his work and to focus on our students and our public school system. During session, there were a couple measures that were taken to try and hold him accountable. First being just at the beginning of session, or right before we go into session in January, we usually have agencies come to the state capitol to present in front of the House. And really the Senate members can come over too, but it's really meant for our House appropriations committees to listen from agency heads to hear what is it that you're going to be asking of the legislature and why, and what are your plans for the upcoming fiscal year. And when Ryan Walters came to share, he literally brought no information and told the members, here's what Joy Hoffmeister, the former state superintendent, did, but we're going to do some different things and I'll bring that information later. And State Representative Forrest Bennett, who's in the House Democratic Caucus from South Oklahoma City, said, you know, the whole point of this meeting is for you to bring that information to us. And then the chairman, Representative Mark McBride, of the Appropriations Subcommittee for Education, basically said, I'm going to stop the meeting. The whole purpose of this meeting is for you to bring that information to us so we can start asking you questions and delving in. And then later on down during session in early May, quite frankly, one of the worst days I've had at the state capitol, we spent about 2 hours using our full House appropriations and budget meeting to allow him to stand in front of us and basically spew all of his campaign rhetoric all over us, never answering a single question from the chairman of the committee, the speaker of the House, myself as minority leader, members of the committee. And we didn't use our full enforcement as a committee to say, you know, this is the information you're going to bring. It's required of you to bring this and answer our questions on what's going on with the State Department because of education. Because at this point, we're hearing from all sorts of people, right? We're hearing from teachers and superintendents and administrators worried about federal dollars coming to their school districts. We're hearing from former agency employees who have left or had been fired about their treatment and things that have gone on within the agency. And then we knew something was eventually coming out and the auditor was doing her audits and that we would get information about that. And then holding him accountable to his the language that he uses and being mindful of. And that was something that I brought up in that meeting was, you know, when are you going to get away from that and actually lead the State Department of Education and be the leader that our educators need? And quite frankly, our students are looking to for when it comes to public education. And so, you know, as things have gone on and then the state auditor's report came out, and then the announcement of a criminal investigation being pursued by the AG, and then, you know, it's just like every day, like you said, it just piles on and piles on. But the fact that we have a school district, you know, in Tulsa Public Schools being targeted, their superintendent, excuse me, being targeted. And then the bomb threats that were made, you know, everything that I have just listed off and that you have listed off, and I think your listeners are already aware of, it really was enough that I think, you know, we needed to sit down and have a public conversation about it. And mind you, Democrats and Republicans are having private conversations. We're trying to figure out ways to hold him accountable. There was a bill we passed, I can't remember the bill number, I apologize, but it was the State Department of Education's limits bill, where we direct where the funding that we're appropriating to the agency to go. In there, there's language saying the state superintendent cannot decide to refuse taking and applying for federal funds. He'd have to go through the legislature to make that decision. So trying to put some protections in place. So doing everything, quite honestly, that we could. But when the bomb threats happened, and then I saw the speaker, make a comment late Friday afternoon, and those of us who know about political communications, things that drop on a late, you know, late in the afternoon on Friday, it's like, well, are you really trying to get the news to capture that or not? That's questionable. But he said something. Then you had a couple other Tulsa members of the Republican caucus say something. So to me, that opened the door to, you are actually, you care, you see, you hear what's going on. I'm not saying they didn't beforehand, but you're understanding that this is rising to a level of seriousness that we cannot ignore, and we cannot continue to tell people there's nothing we can do about it when we can. And so I started thinking back on just different scenarios that I have lived through as a member of the legislature, one being the Dan Kirby investigation, and then the State Department of Health investigation, and then the Swadley's investigation. And it's all right there in the rules that the speaker has the authority to put a committee like this together. And we don't have to be in legislative session to do this. And this is something that I've had to bring up to my constituents and to the public, that you can't just file articles of impeachment and think it's going to go through. One, politically, or for us, numbers wise, we can't get it done because we don't have enough members. On top of that, you really do need to gather as much information to see what rises to the level of impeachment. Of course, our Constitution, you know, lines out. It's not real detailed, but it does line out at least, you know, the willful neglect of duty. I think that's one thing for sure. He can be held accountable to. But let's get together and sit in a room and get all that information collected in one spot and force him to come and answer questions to the committee. And you can't file any, I mean, you can file, as you know, Marianne, you can file legislation, you can do all of this while we're out of session, but that can never, you can't really do anything with it until you're in session. And we're not in session until February. So I'm going to stop there so you can ask maybe more detailed questions, but that's how we got to where we are today. I made the request to the speaker. We had a press conference to publicize the request that we made. And I really felt like it was reasonable. I still feel it's reasonable. And I think it's something that Republicans, regardless of the political climate that we're in today in this state and in this country, it's reasonable enough to get behind to say we're doing our job of holding an elected official accountable to their job. We have the power and authority to do it with the rules and the Constitution, and we should exercise that. And we have been mindful and careful up until this point. And so that's where we're at today. We're a week out since the request has been made. And the speaker's response pretty much was no, but I haven't had a full conversation with him at this point, but I have a hard time understanding how and why they can maintain a no as lawsuits continue to get filed against the state superintendent, and also information like the PragerU contract that has now been signed, which all major or large metro area schools came out on the news this evening and said we're not utilizing that curriculum. So how much money are we spending with that contract for no reason?
So the speaker, I just want to clarify something here. The speaker, in his response to your news conference, basically said, I think they're showboating. Nobody's talked to me about this. And they never came to me first, you know, before. I mean, true, false.
He said that we didn't come and speak to him. I did not go and speak to him about impeachment. And that's true, because I have no reason to talk to him about impeachment because I've asked for a committee. I sent him a letter. The timing was not great either, because there was a group of legislators that were traveling with NCSL, which is a national legislative organization, to Normandy. They're not doing anything nefarious or anything, you know, that it's a bipartisan group. And I did reach out to him, and we didn't get a chance to talk on the phone, but I also did send him a text message. And I will follow up with him because I think it is important enough to try to see a way forward. But the way he responded, he tried to paint the picture as if, yes, that we're asking for something that is just absolutely outlandish. And even his some of the language that was used about it was like aim, fire.
Nope,
we're being pretty pragmatic and thoughtful about how to go about this. And he has the ability to do it. And quite frankly, it isn't just Democrats who want something like this done. Representative Mark McBride is on record saying I'd be a part of the committee. The speaker just needs to do it. Because Republicans are getting just as much, they're hearing just as much from their constituents about the frustrations from people And what's going on. And I've heard now, and quite, and it was after really the bomb threats, because I think that impacts people, especially parents of children, whether your kids go to Tulsa Public Schools or even a public school in general, it impacts them differently. I have had emails from people who say, I am the most conservative person. I've never voted for a Democrat. I never will, but Ryan Walters has to be held accountable. My kids are scared about to go to school. I'm afraid to drop my kids off at school. This level of fear and the violence he's inciting is getting very, I mean, it was already scary, but his rhetoric is, it's intensifying. And we've lived through January 6th. These things are not, I don't think any of us are
over harmless. And they're really not harmless, you know? And so, what, you know, as a parent of two children in schools, you know, so for example, you know, bomb threats aside, you know, the shooting at the Choctaw Dell City game.
Yeah.
Superintendent Cobb's, you know, call for OSSBA to really, you know, take care of this issue. So we have security at football games, and then seeing one by one the districts around the state, Norman Public Schools being one of them, mm-hmm. clamping down on security measures at these football games. Oh. I bring that up because, you know, the Choctaw game shooting was not related to white Christo fascists.
Mm-hmm.
However, we know the harm that this crowd can do and is mm-hmm. willing to do. And so the thought of Ryan Walters, and sorry, my dogs are fighting in the background, or they're wrestling. So if you hear something, it's them. But but it's not insane to imagine what their rhetoric can lead to, you know, because we saw it with January 6th, right? And we've seen what happens when leaders are, and I don't think it's careless. I think it's very deliberate, you know, what this can cause, you know, if our national capital can be brought under siege. It's not hard to imagine in a state like Oklahoma, where we have, you know, permitless carry, what can happen to kids at a school if they believe, you know, these kids are, you know, being indoctrinated by groomers, right? Like, it's not too much of a leap, I don't think, to be worried about that.
Well, and we see what we see. We have a history here in Oklahoma living through the Oklahoma City bombing of rhetoric that came out of Waco and Ruby yes. Ridge and some of those kinds of things that led to an attack on the federal building.
This is fertile ground. Oklahoma is fertile ground for this type of rhetoric. And I don't think, and it doesn't have to be a majority. No. You know, it only takes one, right? It only takes one person. It took two to blow up the Murrah building, right? So it's like, it doesn't take a lot. And it's just like, and honestly, like, my youngest elementary school, had these random fire alarms. The fire mm-hmm. alarm went off twice, and that never happened. So they had to evacuate the whole building. And I was just like, okay, that's got my, I mean, what's going on here? They're trying to herd all the kids out into the playground. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, just the possibilities of someone being out there waiting is, I mean, it's not insane to think these things are a possibility with Ryan Walters left to do his worst.
Right. Well, I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to mention too, placing that target on the, and I don't watch this TikTok account. I don't look at TikTok. It's the last thing yeah. I need to be looking at. But I have a friend from college who's close friends with her, and she's kind of communicated with me on Instagram and things like that. And in fact, this friend of mine just recently left the classroom because she just couldn't take it anymore. A UCO graduate, by the way. But her friend is the librarian that's had the target, and she said she's right. afraid and nervous. And, you know, it's like, you know, you're creating all this fear and anxiety of our teachers and librarians and support staff and our students. And that is not, that is irresponsible. You know, you're being irresponsible with your language and creating great harm, whether it's, you know, this person has been physically harmed at this point or not, you're making it very hard for them to go to work every day and do the work that they were trained to do. I think it was late last week. Okay, today's Wednesday. I'm like, what day is it?
I know.
maybe Thursday. I want to say it was Thursday or Friday where Disney Elementary School, I think they ended up not having school because there was a bomb threat, or they thought there were materials at the suspicious materials at the school. Well, when I dug into the article, it was a custodian who looked at construction materials thinking that those could possibly be a bomb or something of that nature. But see, all that fear you're creating in somebody is now like we're all on high alert thinking a bomb's going to go off at an elementary school.
And you can't take it lightly. Like, you can't be like, it's nothing. You know, right. I mean, these are not things you can blow off. I mean, this is unrelated, but when there was the swatting incident here at OU campus back in April, right? Like, I mean, there were signs that it didn't make sense. Like, no one says Parrington Oval, no one says Van Fleet. However, you don't know this.
Right.
I mean, and so you have to deploy, you know, full tilt, but then what if they're trying to drive attention away? I mean, this is not insane, because this is what these people do. They have made threats. They have stormed the freaking national capital. Like, this is not beyond the pale to think that this is what Ryan Walters could lead to. I mean, and just to, you know, bring it back to when Walters visited Norman for the Cleveland County GOP meeting in the Norman Public Library that many of us were happy to be as disruptive as possible. Some of us got thrown out once or twice, but you know, I mean, just like,
you won't name any names.
No, it may or may not have been me, but I just cannot help myself when these people are talking. But these people are not interested in democracy. They are not interested in the free exchange of ideas. They were very clear about they wanted one viewpoint, and only one sort of viewpoint was welcome at this meeting. But what was really disturbing, it was not the county GOP party. It was Ryan Walters, who just seemed to live, like, he just seemed to like grow off of this energy, right? Like, you were like feeding a flame. It did not deter him, and he did not back down. I crave our state leadership to bring him to heel, you know, it just.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, I just point back to, I don't know 100% for sure, but I know there is no way that members of the Republican caucus are not going to the speaker and saying, here's what I'm hearing. Like, what are we going to do about it? Because they have the power. So I feel like I can freely talk about this here too, is that this is why supermajorities don't work. They don't hold themselves accountable. And quite frankly, the Donald Trumps and the Ryan Walters of the world become who they are because there is no accountability, and they know there isn't. In fact, Ryan Walters is kind of like riding the wave of like, who's going to come after me? A Republican Speaker of the House? The governor really likes me. You know, I mean, who's going to come after him? And I think that's the mentality that he has.
He's just kind of being buffeted along by all this.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if he's just speaking what they're thinking. And I don't think that's the case. I don't think Speaker McCall believes
either. I do not either.
I don't think Greg Treat believes what Ryan Walters is saying. I don't think Greg McCourtney, I don't think any of House leadership believes what Ryan Walters is saying at all. And I mean, and the fact is they could bring him in. You know, McBride tried. Chairman McBride tried.
And we might point out that he's term limited.
Yes,
McBride.
So that gives you a.
You have an out.
You don't have to worry about getting a spinal implant there. You know, he's.
Right. I mean, and McCall is close to terming out as well.
He's terming out.
So I mean, they can.
Yeah, but he has ambition, and I'm not sure McBride does. I think McBride's happy to finish up.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But and. You know, kind of thinking through like the calculus here, you know, like who voted for Walters? Just like, who are they really afraid of? in terms of blowback, you know? And I mean, a statewide office I know is different. I'm just like, what is your problem, gentlemen? Like, what is your problem?
And I have to believe too, that it's like your voter, your primary voter base cannot be that. Are they that influential, you know, in right. terms of, but we're just at a point too, where I just think, you know, you have to have some courage and put, I mean, this is what public service is about. And I am not trying to say I'm above any of these people. I don't have the level of power that they do, but I still think, you know, at some point we have to put the public above, are we going to get reelected? And I firmly believe that people will reelect you for doing the right thing. I do believe that. And look, I've gotten pushback in my district from some constituents, not a majority, but just going back to what you were saying in terms of it is not outlandish for us to think something very terrible could happen at a school or somewhere else based off his rhetoric. Knocking on doors for, you know, to people who, quite frankly, Republican women in their 70s and above, admitting to me they don't have children or grandchildren in the public school system, haven't been in the public school system in a while, you know, don't really know people in the public school system, but who will kind of come at me about what's happening in our schools. That came up a lot in this last election cycle, and they would tear up my walk card right in front of me, or slam the door in my face, or yell in my face. That is not normal behavior. That's not how we treat people. You know, I'm just ringing your doorbell. I'm your state representative. I'm coming by. Yes, I'm trying to earn your vote, but it is my job to show up on your doorstep and have a conversation with you and try to hear, well, what is it that you disagree with? What questions do you have? How can I be held accountable right here on your doorstep? And the reason I bring that up is because what it tells me is that what they hear and what they watch and they continue to hear and they watch, it is radicalizing them, and it's giving them a belief system that is not reality. And then their way of reacting is to kind of get violent. You know, they're ripping my walk card. They're yelling in my face. They're slamming the door. I just think, you know, it is absolutely possible. You're creating this rage. It's manufactured rage about something that's not even happening. I always push back and say, one, I have a nephew in public schools. He's in kindergarten now, but I went to his pre-K class a couple times. I'm like, these teachers are trying to keep butts in the seat. My nephew is the one that keeps them the busiest, you know? And I'm like, and the second thing is, why would I stand 2 to 3 feet away from you having a conversation with you if I was lying about that, you know? And then hearing from teachers on the doorstep who have said, yeah, I left because who goes to work every day to get paid barely anything, not respected for the work that I do, and then constantly have a political target on my back. And these are not like liberal democratic teachers I'm talking to. These are Republicans, you know? And so.
But do you think that's going to change their votes?
I don't know.
This is kind of like the eternal frustration, right? Is like, this is a voting block. Teachers should be a voting block. And yet we see them vote against their self-interest, and it's so disheartening. And so I just have to wonder, you know, okay, if we can't have April Grace,
yeah,
okay. If we can't have, you know, Jenna, okay, fine, right? But like, next year we get another shot. Like, will we see something come from this? I don't know, but then like who's up next year that could turn the tide here? You know what I mean? Like, but will they finally stop voting for people like Ryan Walters? If they know that, like you said, they're just trying to get kids to walk in a straight line.
Right. Yeah.
Stop, you know, picking their noses, get to the lunchroom and back in one piece. I mean, just like the day-to-day operations of educating is a little bit more rudimentary in some cases than like, let me introduce the Marxist, you know, the Communist Manifesto, right? Let's work that in between number theory and learning to count from 1 to 10. Yep. you know, we're going to talk about Comrade Marx. Yeah. I mean, like, there's just so many other things to do than, you know, Kimberly Crenshaw and critical race theory, which I'm sure, you know, what's his face probably doesn't even know who she is.
Still. Right.
So, right. I mean, but I mean, will we really, I don't know. I mean, this is the question, right? We ask this every year on, will they start voting against their self-interest? Because this is a labor issue. This is a class issue. You know, this is a hostile work environment, if you ask me.
But this is not new. That's something else we need to think about here. Because, you know, believe it or not, we've had the Observer for 17 years now, which is, my hair was not gray when we took over. But I remember when we took over that Frosty Troy would tell me frequently, he'd say, I tell teachers, if you vote Republican, you might just as well get up every morning and shoot yourself in both feet. And then I watched the OEA lobbyists trying to make nice with Republican legislators as they ascended to control of both sides of the House. And it was like, no, these people mean you real harm. And but they thought they could make nice with them. And fortunately, they changed that out. And, you know, and now they're battling. But, you know, I remember well that for a long time, Republicans bragged about the fact here in Oklahoma that we don't have Washington style politics here. And yet we have become totally nationalized in our politics. And that's where, to me at least, you see a lot of this. You know, remember, Kevin Stitt, 53% of his vote was straight party vote. Yep. You know, that's how he got reelected, by the margin he did. And you can bet those people, they just walked in, they marked the R, and they left the building. And that was that, and that's how we end up with Ryan Walters now. And of course, we know how you can fix it, but it's not going to be fixed by the powers that be because they like the system the way it is right now. I hasten to point out to them, Democrats were warned about this and didn't do anything about it because they liked the system the way it was. And it came back. It's now biting Democrats in the hiney.
Yeah. Well, and that's why the responsibility is so heavy on, you know, myself and Leader Floyd. And I would say even more so on me, because we have the full full house is up for reelection every 2 years, is that, you know, we have to run strong campaigns. We have to have candidates who are out there challenging, you know, incumbents. We have to, and it takes a lot of work, to do this. But if people don't, really, it is the legislative races that get people to start thinking differently, to think about, okay, well, yes, I'm a Republican. I traditionally vote Republican, and I am living proof of this that, you know, but now there's this Democratic candidate standing in front of me talking about issues that I care about. And it is our job to lower the, you know, it's like, okay, you don't like, how many times have I said, you don't like Obama, you don't like Hillary, you don't like now Joe Biden, which I just think is so funny. I always say this to my dad. I'm like, you know, 10 years ago, Joe Biden was not any kind of threat to you or of concern for you. And now suddenly he's destroying the country. But anyway, you know, I have to say, okay, now let's put that aside. Let's talk about public education. Let's talk. And it takes those face-to-face conversations to break and, you know, break the what's happening on a national level versus what's happening on a local level. And then also showing the connection of what you go through every day. The legislature actually impacts that. Your state representative impacts that. And then also the accountability measures, right? Because everyone just thinks, oh, I'm going to vote for president, I'm going to vote for Congress, I'm going to vote for governor. You know, it's like the higher the office, they think that's the more engaged they are on that versus the person standing right in front of them. I always tell people this finger is more powerful and will impact you like that quicker than anything the president of the United States does. So you might want to get to know me beyond the fact that I'm a Democrat, you know? And I push back much more now than when I was a baby candidate, because I've got some confidence and I feel like, you know, I'm like, I'm out here to educate and inform. But that's expensive. It's a lot of hard work. It is not easy to do. And so I think that's why it's so difficult. But to your point, I mean, after the teacher walkout, I still go back in my mind too of just how difficult that is, because after the teacher walkout, Kevin Stitt got elected, and then the voters brought more of a majority of Republicans to the state house. And I'm like, so it is incumbent upon me and our members and our candidates to keep, you know, communicating to voters day in and day out. And Inman would always say this when he was leader, they will forget in November. People forget, because at that point, shiny new mailers have landed in your mailbox. And suddenly this person who you like were frustrated with during session, now they're like the best thing that's ever happened to your district. And so it takes a lot of work. And so for all the listeners out there, you know, pay attention to what we're doing in the House, with the House Democratic Caucus, because we are trying to build that out and do better. And it's my goal as leader to set a stronger foundation, so when I leave, all of that stays intact for whoever leads next. I'm not here forever. I only have 5 more years to do it. And that's if House District 85 continues to elect me and then my colleagues keep me as leader. But it's hard work. But it is truly, in my opinion, the only way that we break what's happening in Oklahoma. And there is a path. People always say, oh, there's no way Democrats can win in any other district. No, that's not true. You just have to dig a little deeper on the data, and you have to work a little harder. But it will require a lot of door knocking. And I will say it everywhere I go, a million times over. I will sound like a broken record forever and ever, amen, but I do believe door knocking is where we change a lot of that. It's where I always tell people I'm a Fox News interrupter. Even if it's 10 seconds, I got that Republican away from Fox News to come to the door to see that my hair's not on fire. I didn't have
a bowl of snakes, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Or anything. Yeah.
I didn't kill a baby 5 seconds ago. You know, I don't have a bag with guns in them, you know, so it's just, but I think that's the only way forward is the face-to-face local conversations. It was a story on NPR. I can't remember which show it was on, but basically a similar conversation that we're having here about the state of Montana and what Democrats are trying to do in rural Montana, knowing like, yeah, we don't really have a shot out here, but we have to provide the people with a choice. We have to have a conversation. And again, that takes a lot of time and resources, but I think there are states like Oklahoma that are going through this right now. And then of course we see what has happened on a national level, where we're like, you know, we've got to get back on the ground. We've got to talk to people face to face, because I know you all have done campaign work or have talked to voters and talked about issues. So, you know, when we talk about education and healthcare, criminal justice reform, living wages, quite frankly, like even labor and organizing, people one-on-one, when you get them out of their partisan echo chamber, they actually align more with Democrats and the things that we value. But yeah, they get bombarded by the national message and things like that, that it distracts them.
Well, they get blinded by Democrat, Republican.
Right.
You know, I mean, but if you can hyper-localize an issue, it takes on a whole new meaning for a voter, you know? So, I mean, and if you think of that from a school's perspective, that 70-year-old lady that ripped up your walking sheet, you know, if you instead, I don't know, instead it's, you know, and I'm not saying you did anything wrong. That's not my point. But, you know, if it becomes a discussion about we want to preserve our schools, we want to protect public education, right? I mean, these are the shots over the bow for, I mean, I feel like the wall has been breached this year for public education. You know, like we are truly in peril in terms of our public schools. But I mean, just hyper-localizing, deep identifying, you know, our politics with the party, although Democrat all the way, maybe that will help with, you know, meaning old 70-year-old ladies who,
yeah,
chose violence.
That 70-year-old lady who tore up your push card is probably one of those who's showing up at the school board meetings and raising a hell and hasn't had a kid in school in years and years and years. And, you know, it's an interesting group, that force that's out there. I'm curious, though, too, if you have a, I've been given some thought to how we end up in a situation where a majority of voters are perfectly happy to put somebody in office. And I'm thinking particularly of, I call them our twisted trolling twins, Kevin Stitt and Ryan Walters. Stitt continues to troll the tribal nations. You know, his appointment of a new liaison who just so happened to have gotten his ears pinned back by Chuck Hoskin Jr., you know, in the Cherokee Nation race earlier this year. You know, that's a poke not only in the tribal, in the eyes of all the tribal nations, but it's, you know, it's a particular poke in the eye to Chuck Hoskin Jr. there. So, you know, he does his trolling. And then you have Ryan Walters, you know, he's on, you know, with his carpool karaoke crap about drag queens and all this other stuff, you know, going on. It's all about performance, though, to me. Now, I'm not saying that they don't do some things that meet the aims of dismantling, of blowing the whole thing up, which is what I think they would like to do. But they're all about performance, it seems to me, not actually getting anything done.
No.
Now, you know, what has Ryan Walters done to improve reading scores in Oklahoma, to, you know, to improve?
Oh, he has his buzzwords. He has no actual basis, and he's run off everyone at OSDE who would know, who is a reading specialist. He talks about the science of reading. Every teacher's like, I mean, literally every teacher's like, we already do that. You know,
but he seems to think, you said it, he feeds off this stuff. He loves
the attention. He really does. It's like you almost see him like growing.
But he seems to think that this is how you lead, you know, and it's not.
Nope. But I mean, to your point about the evil twins, you know, I mean, it's the same thing. He has introduced nothing but grift and corruption. I mean, if you want to look like what he's actually done, that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's passed permitless carry. He has brought 5 state agencies, you know, under his wing. And what the fuck?
He's attacked trans community. I mean,
he's done nothing but harm.
Yeah.
Very little an actual statute, thank God. You know, so I mean, yeah, it's just been like kind of a rudderless 8 years. Will be, because there are no real policy ideas that they're promoting. It's simply buzzwords and, you know, catchphrases that rile up the older base of voters, while they're disenfranchising young voters left and right.
But for Cindy, for you, that's gotta be tough. How do you, you know, it's like trying to corral a ghost in a sense.
Yeah.
Because they don't play by the same rules, but the system suffers as a result, right?
There's nothing there, right? So like, yeah, what
do they're there.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, how do you latch on to that? But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, Cindy, like, why won't House leadership engage with this? I mean, that's the question. I don't expect you to have an answer.
I know.
You know, I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't want to put you on the record anyways if you did.
Well, like, I would. I'd want to put her on the record. Come on.
I think at the end of the day, and it's unfortunate because I agree with you with what you said earlier. Do I think that the speaker agrees with what Ryan Walters is doing? I don't.
No, absolutely not.
Look, I do not always agree with Speaker McCall, but he is a professional person. I mean, he's, you know, that his leadership style is very much like, I'm not gonna be yelling and screaming on a microphone and doing all this stuff. And he tries to work things out as much as he can, I think, behind the scenes and all that, but which I can't appreciate. But I think, like I said earlier, I think there are moments in time, like right now, where you've got to put future election ambitions to the side and really think about what's happening to the state of Oklahoma. He has the third or fourth highest position in the state of Oklahoma. Like, I wouldn't want to look back in history books as Speaker of the House, knowing I was in leadership when all this was going on and I didn't do anything about it.
If you could run on governor on the platform of I saved public education in the state.
I agree. I have also
stood by and watched it go down.
Yeah, I
under
have
my watch as Senator Treat, as Speaker McCall, because I can never remember what Treat's full title is. So
yeah, I've tried to do the math too in my mind.
Yeah, I love it. But I mean, any future office that they run for, it looks like right now they're just going to say, I watched the ship go down.
Because, you know, even though, yes, I would like to see teachers vote in their best self-interest as well and vote for Democrats and things like that, I think at the end of the day, in rural Oklahoma especially, because in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, you do have more quote-unquote options, choices, all this. But in Guymon, you just have Guymon Public Schools. Right. In Durant, you just have Durant Public. You don't have all these options and choices. These are major employers for their communities. It's educating their kids to prepare for the workforce in that area, in their communities. I mean, it's how they keep their communities. It's how they survive. It's how you take care of each other through your schools. And so,
can I just bring up a hard time? I want to mention too, though, if you're talking about Guymon, and Durant, you know, these are not schools that are like remote and removed from the world. If you've been to Guymon, you've seen the crossroads, and there are freight trucks going through that town all the time. It is, and then the locals, like the officials, will talk at length about how they have 38 languages in their public schools.
That's right.
You know, and so the communities that converge there through, you know, the agribusiness and all of that, this is not, I mean, when I was there on state business, like, you know, for a state agency years ago, and I think my colleagues ate at like a vegan Filipino restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this is not a place removed from the world, you know, right. And Durant, it's right. Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, all right there. I mean, in border cross, like you cross the border right and left in these parts of the state. And so it's like there's more diversity there than we realize. And sometimes, and I just was like, you know what, maybe this is part of what fuels it. Again, from those people whose kids are not in school, no longer have kids, but it's just like, these are not towns that are like lily white.
Right. And, you know, and to your point though, there's investment going on there. I mean, quite frankly, in Durant, thanks to the Choctaw Nation and, you know, but
thanks to the Choctaw Nation, yeah, say that a little bit louder.
Yeah. Investment and development, economic opportunities. So yeah, these kids, they have to be educated if they want their communities to survive and then thrive. You know, in order to do that, you have to bring jobs. You have to have something for people to do, and they have to be able to make a living, and you need to be educated to do that. And so I just, I'm saying all that to say that I just have a hard time believing that my Republican colleagues who represent rural areas of the state are not hearing from their constituents every day. They are. And look, I've heard from some of my colleagues that have said, he's an elected official. This is who the people elected. What am I supposed to do about that? Even though we do have our, you know, we have the Constitution, all that. But, and to that point, I have spoken to that and have responded and said, we agree. And we've tried to be mindful and careful and have used the tools in our toolbox to try to figure out a way to hold them accountable without going all the way. But it's not working and nothing's coming to light. We're not able to collect all the information and put it in one spot. We need to be able to have a public discussion in a public meeting setting and have public findings and let us do that work in the public eye. I do try to remind my constituents too, that he is an elected official. You can call his office too and let him know that Oklahomans are watching. It's not just all on us. And just to bring it back to Democrats, you know, I will say this, and something that has, I will say, personally frustrated me is that when these types of things go on and happen, everybody calls on the Democrats to do something about it. but you don't give us the power to do something about it.
Right.
So start looking up and down your ballot and seeing who is on there. And then, you know, by the time you get your ballot, there's not much you can do. But for the next election cycle, question, why isn't anyone challenging my state representative? Why isn't anyone challenging my state senator? And if you end up choosing the current person, fine. But you have to have a choice of ideas, a choice of, you know, you need to have some options. I am challenged every cycle, and I probably will be till the end of time. And so I'm not advocating for something that I myself don't have to. I go out there and I have to earn every vote every cycle. And that's fine. It's hard work, but that's the job. That is what keeps me grounded. It's what keeps me aware of what my constituents think and what they ask and what I know they want of me. And I don't have to call them every single day. I already know. I've already been on their doorstep. The number of constituents too who will say, I don't even have to call you because you already know where I'm at. Even though I would like for them to call more often, especially if they do agree with me. So I can just like
have a little bit of affirmation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Affirmation goes a long way. But that's
a pat on the back once in a while is not a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
but that has personally frustrated me in that. Like we as the Democratic caucus, we have and we will. And when you're in the minority, yeah, it is sort of you already know that's your role to speak up and speak out and hold the majority accountable, regardless of party, really. But you know, if you don't send me more members, if you don't help me in that aspect, there's only so much I can do. And so, yeah, I direct people to the speaker's office. If people in other districts contact me, I direct them back to their representative, you know, because they need to hear. And that's what I tell my colleagues too, is that like all the things we stand up and push back on, especially your extremist ideas, you know, all these people who don't agree with you don't just live in our districts. They live in your districts too. You're just not listening to them or they're not contacting you.
And at the end of the day, it's every state legislator's job to represent all their constituents,
yes.
Not just
yes.
the ones that align.
And it's the hardest part of the job, but that is what we are called to do.
And it's completely like forgotten, or not forgotten, it's ignored by Kevin J. Stitt and Ryan Walters, right? Like, as statewide elected officials, their job is to represent all of us.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I'm not going to say what I was thinking, but it just, they owe it to all of us, you know? So what possibly happened next with this?
Well, we'll continue to make our request.
So it doesn't expire.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. And that's really what, in my opinion, is why I just, again, I have a hard time with, you know, believing that the speaker and Republicans in general will say no to this, because as we have talked about this entire show, and as days go on, Ryan Walters will continue to do things that will harm public education in Oklahoma. He will continue to do things that, you know, honestly bring a lot of shame to his position, and it's just going to keep adding up. And I think for Republicans, they probably want something, they, you know, eventually like these lawsuits or this criminal investigation that'll come out. I don't know, because I don't know. I truly don't. I'm not hiding anything here, but I think eventually all that will come out. And then what? Will it be too late? You know, it's like, at what yeah. point are you know, we're going to try our best to get ahead of it, or you know, at least acknowledge
the federal government clawing back millions yes. and millions of dollars that then yeah. have to be plucked somewhere from, you know, the general pool of like,
exactly.
I mean, is that the only thing that is going to hold them accountable?
Which will cost the state taxpayer, you know, cost us money, because then we're going to have to use state dollars to probably fill some of those holes. I mean, some we can't and won't, because, you know, if it's a federally funded program and then the program's just gone, but there will be things that the state of Oklahoma may be held responsible
right, those for. Gear funds, man, they're going to count for every penny of that. I mean, and they bitched about it when it happened at, you know, the healthcare authority and all that. You know, they had to call up, what was it, $15, $16, $17 million that they had to come up with. I mean, that's going to happen again. The federal government's not going to forget. So, I mean, God, it's incredible. But
so we'll see. But no, it doesn't expire. It doesn't, you know, again, you don't have to be in regular session or special session to do it. We're simply asking for, and in fact, I even made the suggestion that put the members on Common Ed or on the sub A and B committee who are already tasked in a, they are already tasked to focus on public ed in Oklahoma, and they have been appointed and approved by my members have been appointed and approved by me, and the speaker has approved and appointed all of his members and then approved of our members from the Democratic caucus. Your committee's already there.
Yeah.
This is their job.
Put Loft on charge of it or something. Yeah. Like some sort of oversight. I mean, like
all these mechanisms, we should use them. And it's our kids. You know, I think about my own life. I would not be a state representative without my teachers, without my public school system, going to college, going to grad school. And that's a lot of Oklahoman stories. And I have a nephew in school. I know you have children, Marianne, in school, and I'm not a parent, but my nephew is in school, and I see the impacts of what's going on. Just our teachers bombarded and overwhelmed and what that creates. And you know, my nephew deserves a high quality public education, period, because he's a human being just like every other child deserves. I thank God every day that my nephew goes to Oklahoma City Public Schools where breakfast and lunch
is provided. We pay taxes for this. Like we are paying for this. These are not free services, right? Like we put money into the pot and it should be used well, right? Like, and then all these other things that they try and create, I'm like, no, these are actually taxes, people. So, I mean, let's use our money the way it's supposed to be used. I mean, oh my God. Yeah.
And then the teachers leaving the classroom, that really scares me and makes me sad.
At the same time though, I'm like, you know what?
I mean, I get it. Yeah,
they should.
Yeah.
Leave. Do something else. No one deserves to work like this.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it sucks, but I mean, my kids are going to be fine. They have two parents at home that can, you know, supplement. My husband can teach all the calculus he wants, whatever. But like, I could teach my kids lit. I mean, it's
there you go.
But there's so many kids that like, it will harm them. Yes. But teachers shouldn't put up with this as their workplace. Is this a class action lawsuit? Can I speak that into the ether? Class action lawsuit, hostile work environment, Oklahoma head. I mean, that'd be just add one more to the, yeah. Just one more to the docket.
Back to the pile.
Right. I mean, and like he cares. So geez.
Yeah. Which is really,
yeah, that's the thing. Like this guy.
Yeah.
I feel like when my kids were little, like when my kids was little and she would only wear dresses, and I'd be like, it was the only leverage I had was threatening dresses. Like, you know, like, I mean, it was the only leverage. I was like, I don't know what the leverage is with him.
Yeah.
To make him act right.
I don't know. Nothing.
So, yep. Well, Arnold, do you have anything else?
No, I think we know what the issues are. We know kind of what to look for. And if folks, you know, never hurts to drop your representative a line, or a speaker too, and just say, this is not acceptable.
Yep.
You need to do something.
Yep. I mean, do we appeal to their sense of pride? Like, this is embarrassing. This is embarrassing. Yeah. Of all the embarrassing things Oklahoma has done, this is embarrassing.
It will be, there will be some Fox News coverage. I know that because they reached out to me today. And my dad's a Fox News watcher. And I said, hey, my name might be mentioned. So,
KOKH, the local Fox News is a little bit different. They got some teeth.
Yeah, no, this is the national Fox News.
Oh, wow.
So what I'm saying is, to your point about embarrassment, which for some it may not be embarrassing, but you know, there's been some national coverage, but now that Fox News is picking up on it, and I just think, you know, it's, yeah, it's, you know what, to your point too, just really quickly, I went to NCSL, you know, Legislative Summit National Conference, and I met this guy who does like research, maybe in North Carolina, can't remember, but, you know, introduces himself, who, you know, what's your name, this is at a social thing too. Cindy Munson, I'm from Oklahoma. Oh my God, you have that crazy state superintendent. Great. Glad that's the first thing that comes to mind. We also have great sunsets.
I know. It's like the one
great
common.
People who live all across the state of Oklahoma, you know.
Republicans, come get your boy. Please come get your boy. Like,
and at some point,
put him in the cab, send his drunk ass home. Like, God.
I would not want to be a Republican trying to defend all of that either. I would think at some point that would wear them out too. But they've also had Trump for however many years at this point now. So anyway, all that to say, thanks for having me. We'll keep at it.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll, I'll be texting you again. If
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have an update at some point.
I know. We'll see what they do. So it'd be October surprise? Who knows? So, who knows? I don't know if we do that this year, but anyways. Well, Representative Munson, thank you for your time. It was great to talk to you as always, and we will talk to you again.
Sounds great.
Keep fighting. Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.